Well, good morning, church. My name is Trevor Miller, and it is an honor to be with you in the sanctuary this morning. Really excited to be able to come and spend time on this really, really special day. As you just heard in the video that Michelle just shared with us, this is a special Sunday because we are highlighting one of the greatest ministries in Mount Horeb, which is our special needs ministry. And Michelle did a beautiful job of expressing the blessing of having special needs families in our midst and at the table here at Mount Horeb. I found in my life that there's nothing more important than having a space at the table. And you probably remember this. Y'all remember middle school? Can you think back to middle school? Maybe you're like, I don't ever want to go there again. But in your mind, just in your mind. If you go back to middle school, you know one of the most anxiety-filled times throughout the day was what? Lunch. Because you would come into the lunchroom, you would get your lunch tray, and you would walk into the big cafeteria, and you would look around hoping to find what? Some place to sit. So you'd walk around with your tray and you'd look around. And I remember I moved to Texas when I was in eighth grade. I knew nobody. In the first lunchroom I walked into, I'm like, this is horrible. This is terrible. I had nowhere to go. You scan the cafeteria, There was something wonderful when you looked around and all of a sudden saw a familiar face. And you saw a vacant seat. And you were able to walk over and sit down and enjoy your meal in peace because you had a place to call home, at least for those few minutes. Here's the truth. Every one of us this morning know what it's like to want a place at the table. Every one of us know what it's like to look for a place at the table. And this church, more than any other venue in our lives, should be a place where we can find camaraderie and care, where we can find support and shelter. And this morning is all about celebrating a church that has over and over again found ways to intentionally add a leaf to the table, to invite more families and more individuals to the family of God and to the table of God, who might otherwise still be scanning the room looking for a place to go and to sit and have a place called home. This is the thing our special needs friends who just blessed us in worship this morning, who we rub shoulders with in the hallway, who we get to spend time with often, that's all they're looking for, just like we are, a place to be loved and a place to call home and a seat at the table. There's a reason why in the scriptures there's this imagery of a table that is spoken of over and over again. If you read from Genesis to Revelation, over 73 times the writers talk about the table of God that symbolizes the connection that people can have over a meal, the covenantal practices that take place at the table, and the worship that can flow from that place. And so in the book of Luke, it's no surprise that Jesus talks about this imagery as well. Jesus, in Luke chapter 14, has been invited to the home of a Pharisee. And the house is full, and Jesus is there, and he's having a meal with all these individuals that are in the house. They're all sitting around the table, reclining and enjoying a meal together. And Jesus begins to address some of the selfishness in the room, some of the self-interest in the room that he saw around the table in this religious leader's home. You see, in the ancient Near East, banquets or meals were often held to grow social status. You would host a meal in your home to build alliances or to honor the rich and the powerful in order to receive some kind of kickback or some kind of payback of some sort. It was the ancient Near Eastern version of the middle school lunchroom. Everyone came in jockeying for position. Now, it happened in the ancient Near East, but don't we know in Lexington, South Carolina, the same thing happens as well? There are meals and times together around tables every single day in this community where the same thing is happening. Jockeying for position, looking for power and some kind of kickback. And Jesus sees this and he addresses it as something that goes directly against the kingdom of God. So in Luke chapter 14, verse 12 through 14, here's what Jesus says. Then Jesus said to his host, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, invite Trevor. He didn't say that, but he should. When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or your sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. So can you imagine Jesus coming into this meal and all of a sudden addressing the host in this kind of way? Hey, when you have a meal, don't invite the folks that you would normally invite, but instead, put another leaf on the table. Invite those you wouldn't normally invite around the table. In this passage, Jesus warns his listeners against inviting people to the table based upon what they can give you in return. This reflected a large principle in the Pharisees' mind that hospitality should be a driving force to invite people into your home in order to somehow extend your power, to somehow advance your ideology or your plan. This challenged the cultural norm that Jesus talks about. The cultural norm was quid pro quo, where people expected to gain something for themselves by hosting others around the table. This mentality goes directly against the kingdom of God. In stark contrast, Jesus advocates for inviting those who are marginalized. And he names them. He says the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. In a word, he says, those who cannot repay you. Those should be the ones you invite around the table. Now, these groups were often neglected, were excluded from social gatherings in the ancient Near East in Jesus' day. What Jesus is doing here is dealing with the motives of people's hearts. Why they're throwing the party. Why they're inviting those particular individuals. Remember, the Bible was first written to the people in the ancient Near East, but it's also given to us today here in Lexington, South Carolina. So, what can we learn from what Jesus is teaching here? What can we gain from what Jesus says to this household, these religious leaders who are there? We should pay close attention, I believe, to the people that we surround ourselves with. Are we just trying to advance our own popularity and status by those that we surround ourselves with? Are we just playing into the cultural norm of only associating with those who can repay us somehow in worldly ways? Or are we taking advice from Jesus and inviting those we normally wouldn't invite to be in our midst? Hear me this morning. The crowd you surround yourself with says a lot about who you are. The crowd you surround yourself with says a lot about who you are. I believe this is what Jesus is addressing. You show me your friends and I'll show you your future. You show me who's sitting at your table and I'll show you your heart. You see, for those who love Jesus, our motives must be transformed to mirror the heart of God, the one who sacrificially sent his only son in order that we might be saved and his table might be full of people from every walk of life, every ethnic background, every diverse ability, and every social status. Jesus invited them all. One of my greatest joys this summer was being able to serve at a vacation Bible school that is a week specific to special needs, which within itself is wonderful. There were over 100 participants, countless volunteers who made that week possible the week before our larger vacation Bible school that took place. And I was honored to be a part of the Bible teaching crew that week. So my job was to tell a Bible story, I think the last day of the week, I can't remember. And so I was dressed up in full biblical garb, looking the part of John. So I was telling the story from John's perspective about Jesus' life, death, and then his resurrection. So the room was full, the volunteers came in, it was time for the Bible story. Over 100 individuals in wheelchairs, sitting on the floor, standing everywhere. It was standing room only, very, very full. I began to tell the story, and as I began to tell the story of Jesus' death, you can imagine there was a bummer in the room. Everyone was like, this is not a fun story. So quickly, I moved to the next part of the story. And when the character who was playing Jesus, who had just died in the story, came back in the back of the room and began to walk to the front of the stage again, the room erupted with clapping and laughter and joy and excitement because Jesus was alive. Such a refreshing thing for me. Do you know how many situations I find myself in with church folk who don't get excited about the fact that Jesus is resurrected and alive today? And yet to stand in that room and have the opportunity to tell that story with those individuals and to have a fire ignited in my heart to remember what it means for Jesus to not be dead but be alive forevermore, that is joy. And that is a gift. And that's why we must make space around the table for individuals to come to be a part of what God is doing. I'm so glad to have had the joy to be a part of that vacation Bible school and the ones in the past. And I want more of that in my life. Because it does something to me. It changes me somehow. And as I looked around the room of all the faces of the volunteers that were in there with me, I thought to myself, this is what the kingdom of God looks like. This is what Jesus is referring to. A table full of people, diverse individuals with different backgrounds, different struggles, different difficulties, but all experiencing the love of God together. You see, the special needs ministry of Mount Horeb is a reflection of God's heart. It's a reflection of this church's heart, what we believe to be valuable, what we believe to be most important. And for years, under wonderful leadership and dedicated volunteers from across the board, Mount Horeb has created an environment of love and belonging for all people. In the most recent years, this effort has been spearheaded by one of my favorite people on the planet Earth named Michelle Hunt. And so I want to invite Michelle to the stage now. Would you welcome Michelle Hunt to come and share with us a bit this morning? Now, Michelle, I asked a question earlier, and I don't want this congregation to miss out on it either, but who is your favorite staff member that you get to work with here at Mount Horeb?
Well, let me scan the room.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. Trevor Miller.
Yes, okay, good. Thank you. We
of
said,
course,
unfortunately,
Trevor
this
Miller.
Morning, your fan club's not in the room anymore because you got a raucous rouse of applause as you came to the stage, but thank you so much for coming and spending a little time with us. Michelle is our special needs coordinator here at the church and works alongside of a wonderful team of people to do an amazing work here at the church. And Michelle will be the very first one to be like, it is not me. It is so many individuals who give of their time, their efforts to be able to love people and to love them well. But Michelle, I want to have a little bit of discussion with you, and you did a wonderful job in the video a second ago. But tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe how your family got here to the church and kind of how God got you where you are today.
Oh, man. Well, my name is Michelle. My husband, Lee, and I have been married 25 years this month, and I grew up in the church. I've always been a Methodist, and when we got married, we were so excited to be parents. We just couldn't wait, and we did not plan on being special needs parents. You know, God chose us for this path. It's not one that we, you know, dreamed about, but it's one that I'm so thankful that God chose me for, because I would have missed out on so much in this lifetime if he didn't choose us, if he didn't choose me and Lee and my son Daniel to be Anna Neal's parents and brother.
So as Anna Neal came into your life, what was your experience in the church that maybe kind of led you to where you are today?
Oh, yeah. Well, Anna Neal was diagnosed at 2.5, which is great because it gives you time to do therapy when they're really young. But I grew up in the church, and she'd been in the nursery. Everything was fine. But as kids start to separate, as they start to learn and do different things, I got really nervous that Anna Neal was going to be going to a Sunday school class for the two-year-olds. And I was thinking in my head, how is she going to follow the line? How is she going to sit in the circle? How is she going to do the certain things that she was going to need to do to participate in her Sunday school class? So I just said, okay, I'm just going to teach Sunday school. Never been a teacher. So I decided that's what I was going to do. But about that time, you know, it's funny, we talked about how God puts people in your life that can change it. And miracles happen every day, and he's always shaping us. But about that time, I met a lady in our church at the time. She was a retired special ed teacher. And then another family came to our church who had been had left their church because there wasn't a special needs program. And a friend said, just come to church with us. We'll figure it out. Well, that was exactly at the time Anna Neal was diagnosed. And that was when we started a special needs ministry called the Sunflower Ministry. And it started off with Anna Neal and two of her friends. So he just makes a path for us.
Mm-hmm.
He really does.
Hey, you've shared with me, multiple stories of, you know, your life, even growing up, that God prepared you for what you're doing today and makes you so effective today. And I know in listening to you share even that story, there's such gratitude in your heart and true thankfulness in your heart. And it's funny because when Jesus talks in the passage in Luke 14, he tells them, don't invite people to your table that can repay you. But what's kind of odd is actually we do get a repayment. There is something that comes back to us as we spend time at Vacation Bible School, especially these basketball, you name it, all these different things. There's a payment that we get that's maybe different from what the world would expect. So can you tell me a little bit about that? What happens to us, and what do we get to have an opportunity to be, you know, front and center for as a church by having special needs within our midst?
You know, God was paving a way for me. And, you know, I look back at my life, and you get different, you probably think this too sometimes, you have different memories that just pop up and different things that have happened to you as you were growing up, like your middle school story. When I was a teenager, I was asked to go and help this young man. He was in a nursing home. He was very crippled. His mind was okay, but his body was crippled, and he could not feed himself. His parents had passed, and that's why he was there. And so as a teenager, I would go. I would feed him. We'd play games on this Atari or something. It was way back in the day. But we would hang out, and, you know, I'd never realized God was preparing me for Ananiel. He was getting me ready. He was exposing me to all types of people. Also, one time when Daniel was really little, he was invited to this karate class birthday party. I'm not even sure what it was. And the sensei, the teacher, was at the front of the room, and he was working with all of the kids. And all of the kids were everywhere. They were kids running around, going nuts. There were kids that really wanted to try. There were kids that were bigger that could really do the stuff. There were kids that were teeny that, you know, could barely just hang on and not get knocked over. But he gave every kid a chance in that class. Every kid, he talked to each one and gave every kid a chance. And I just watched how he taught these kids. I said, there is something really special about this guy. And it was about a year or so later, I learned that, first of all, he loved Jesus. But second of all, he was a special needs parent. So he had this grace and this tolerability that he tolerated all kinds of behaviors and all kinds of kids. And he could just really work with those kids. And I thought at that time, that's the kind of teacher I want to be. That's the kind of person I want to be. I want to give everybody a chance.
Mm-hmm. And as beautiful and as, you know, grateful as you are, I know it probably wasn't always that easy. And there's probably pain along the way. And so what did you learn about God in your family as you've experienced what you've experienced?
Wow. Well, you know, with anything, any challenge that you face in life might not be what you planned on. It might not be how you thought it was going to be. Like when Ananias was born, we're already thinking about when she goes to school, what kind of car is she going to want, when she's going to get her driver's license. You have to grieve that. You have to let yourself grieve what's not going to happen. But then it sets you up to just experience so much joy for what is going to happen. You know, when she was diagnosed, Lee was in medical school at the time, so he probably knew more than he really wanted to know. About autism and apraxia and the things that we were going to have to face with her. And we decided we were going to go to the altar in prayer. And we called our pastor at the time and several other key people that were very important to our walk with God. And we left it at the altar. We cried. We wept together. And we prayed over her that God would protect her and that God would direct us and guide us through it. And at that point, I just let it go. I said, Lord, you know, you're going to guide. You're driving this ship, you know, even though I think I'm in charge. But you know, you're in charge. And I decided at that point in time that I was going to live every day to the fullest. I was going to make every day count. I wasn't going to worry about what was going to happen tomorrow or what the next step was going to be. I was going to set her up for success every day. And really, that's kind of the same way we look at it, you know, with Daniel too. Just being able to just walk with him. There was a sign I told you about before that we saw. It said, have you prayed about it as much as you've talked about it? So every time I think, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm fussing about this or I'm trying to figure this out. And then I'm like, oh my goodness, I talked to this person, and this person. I need to be talking to this person and really pray about it because that's who can actually change it.
That's a good word. I mean,
or support me in it.
It's a bit of a microcosm, kind of our life as a whole, because this may not be our experience, but we've all in the room experienced some kind of loss. You know, something we've had to grieve and recognize that maybe tomorrow is different than we had anticipated. And so my big question for you as we kind of end here is, what should we do then? When God allows surprises in our lives, what should be our response?
Good surprises, bad surprises. You know, life is lots of ups and downs, ebbs and flows. You've got to just roll with it. But you have got to remember that we are not in control and he's going to take care of us. You have to have a close personal relationship with him, and you have to have a church family like this. You know, I am so thankful for my church. I'm so thankful for a place for that my family belongs here. Anna Neal has a place she goes. Daniel had a place. He grew up here with youth and small group with you. I mean, he had his place. She has hers. Lee and I are able to be here and to grow and to learn more about Jesus. But I am just thankful for all the support and all the friends that God has put in our path. You know, people that we may not have met along the way, but I think just a close personal relationship with him can fix a whole lot of everything.
Mm-hmm. I like what you said, just take every day as it comes.
Absolutely. It comes. You can't worry about, you know, my mom used to say, the world's no better if we hurry, the world's no better if you worry. So worrying isn't going to change it, and hurrying might get you a ticket, but... So you just got to pray about it. You got to release some of that. And, you know, you got to grieve what you thought it might have been. But and once you do that, you can really experience the true joy that these kiddos bring or whatever you're experiencing.
Michelle, I am so grateful to be able to work alongside of you and to see, you know, front seat all the wonderful things that happen through our special needs ministry. Would you join me in thanking Michelle one more time this morning?
Thank you so much. Thank you for being a church that recognizes families like ours and that gives us a place. And so if you have neighbors or you have somebody that maybe doesn't go to church that feels like they might not have a place because they're worried about their child fitting in, bring them to Mount Horeb. Give me a call. We'd love to talk to them and see what that child needs, and we will make it work because, you know, we serve kids from little bitty to older than me, and I still call them kids. But thank you for being a church that loves all families.
Thank you, Michelle. So here's the irony in that whole discussion. As Jesus says in Luke 14, he says, invite those to the table who can't repay you. But you could just hear from the few minutes talking to Michelle and probably any other person who has volunteered in this church with Vacation Bible School or Night to Shine or the Joy Day program, there is a reward. There is something that we get repaid back when we have special needs individuals and families around the table with us. We have been repaid more than we can imagine by having families with special needs in our midst here at the church. Is it monetary? No. Is it influence? No. Is it status? No. It's actually so much more valuable than all of those things. What we gain is so much more valuable. We've been given the gift of spiritual transformation. We've been given the gift of a transformation that takes place deep in our souls. Our special needs families have made us more loving, more kind, more caring, more empathetic, more resilient, and more like Jesus. Is this true for you? I mean, maybe the first thing you need to do today after hearing what's taking place this morning is change your proximity to our special needs ministry. If you didn't know there's opportunities to serve at Vacation Bible School or basketball or Night to Shine or any of these opportunities, maybe just changing your proximity, you would get a chance to meet individuals and be changed by people like Stephanie or Anna Neal or Mitchell, who has called me Travis for the past 15 years, by the way, or Jonathan or Lee, or I had to add Abby. She made sure she was on the list this morning as well. Maybe changing proximity to that could be an impact on your life. It could change you. You know, before we had a true and vibrant special needs ministry here at Mount Horeb, our middle school ministry was the special needs ministry. So I began here as an intern and then went full-time after a couple of years doing middle school ministry. And in my middle school ministry, every Wednesday night, we had Valerie Samples, we had David Moody, we had Reuben Cleckley, and Reuben is right back there right now. They came and spent time with me and all the middle school students every Wednesday night. It was a joy. One of my favorite things was when I would preach on a Wednesday night to all the middle school students, I would get to like the crux of the message, the most important part. And it would never fail. I would say to the students, you just need to know you are loved by God. And it never failed. As soon as I would say something like that, David Moody from the back of the room would pipe up and say, I love you too, Trevor. I'd say, thank you, David. Perfect timing for that comment. But looking back now, I wouldn't trade the beginning of my ministry for anything. It shaped me and it molded me. It made me more sensitive to the needs in my community than I would have been otherwise. It made me more empathetic to the needs around me. It made me care more than perhaps I would have in and of myself. And this is the repayment that we get. Opening our tables, adding a leaf for families to come and spend time. You see, Michelle shared about the need for a Sunday school class, which really began her journey towards ministry that she's doing today. And there are so many churches around our community who have never taken the time to say, what would it look like for us to be intentional in allowing folks around the table that otherwise may not have a place? See, special needs are not meant to be tolerated. They're meant to be celebrated. They're meant to be celebrated. And that's why this morning I'm so honored that our church would say, you know what, this is just going to be a day, unapologetically, we're going to celebrate those who are in our midst, who we have already benefited from, but we want to put a spotlight on them. See, the Apostle Paul seems to understand the need for a diverse table within the church and for people of all kinds of abilities to be together. As he writes to the early church in Corinth, he talks about how different and valuable each and every person is to the kingdom of God. He says this in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 22 through 25. He says, on the contrary, those parts of the body, speaking of the church, that seem to be weaker or are indispensable, and the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has put the body together, giving greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division within the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. So when Paul writes about this, he uses this metaphor of a body to describe the church. And he says a body has a head and feet and hands and legs, and they all have a certain part to play. So he says within the church, all of these parts, these should be a special focus on the weaker parts and the ones that are actually indispensable and are deserving of special honor. Paul challenges the Corinthians and the Corinthian church to have attitudes changing towards hierarchy and status, and instead emphasizing that every member is essential, even those who seem weaker or perhaps are less important. And the ultimate goal is unity in the body of Christ. When every member is honored and cared for, division is minimized, and the church can function as a unified body with love and respect all around. Paul makes two points that I think are very important for us this morning that I want to end on. The first one, I believe Paul challenges us to put a spotlight on the overlooked as God does. To put a spotlight on the overlooked, the way Paul describes this. It's incredibly important for our church to grasp, for every church to grasp. The world may often dismiss or ignore those with disabilities or special needs, but the church is called to something different. We're called to spotlight them. If you've never been to Night to Shine, you should sign up this year. It is a spotlight all night long with music and meals and dancing and paparazzi, you name it, it's all there. And it's because we want to celebrate those who are in our midst. The value they bring is not measured by the same standards of the world. It's not financial success or influence or certain specific abilities, but by the depth of love, compassion, and joy they bring into our lives. So just like Jesus dined with sinners, he dined with the poor, and those the society would deem unworthy, we are invited to open our table to everyone, to see the kingdom of God come to life. You know, this morning, David Olshine is preaching over in our contemporary space. And David has a son named Andrew. And I met Andrew when he was about 4 or 5 years old when I started going to Columbia International University. And I would go to Olshine's house all the time. And I've grown up with Andrew. He's grown up with me. And one of my favorite things is Andrew has always invited my boys to come to his birthday parties. So for the past couple of years, my boys have been to Chick-fil-A. They've been to people's houses for birthday parties for Andrew. And we want to make sure we always show up and spend time with him. Andrew just wrote a book, if you did not know. And my boys have it in their room. It's part of their devotional. They read at night when they go to bed. And they spend time with Andrew. And there was one party that we went to where Andrew's mom, Rhonda, came and said, hey, listen, to my son Eli, you need to make sure that Andrew's not eating any more cheese. He's had far too much queso and he doesn't need any more. It's going to mess with his stomach. So my young son was put in charge of watching Andrew to make sure he wasn't eating cheese. But guess what Andrew did? Snuck queso all the time. So Eli had to go to Rhonda and say, oh, Miss Rhonda, Andrew's eating queso again. So he had to snitch on Andrew. But I'll tell you what, my boys having the chance to be in those situations and spend time with Andrew have shaped them. It's made them more sensitive. It's made them more kind. And I am eternally grateful for it. And we have the same opportunity as a church. Secondly, I think Paul tells us this, that we should celebrate hidden blessings. We should celebrate hidden blessings. The hidden blessings that come from including individuals with special needs in our lives are far greater than any worldly reward we could ever seek, better than all of them. They teach us lessons about kindness and patience and grace. These are the qualities that transform our hearts to become more and more like Jesus Christ. And in a world that emphasizes productivity and efficiency and speed, those with special needs remind us the beauty of slowing down and being present and appreciating all the simple joys of life. And if we're not careful, we'll miss it. These are hidden blessings. And so as a church, we must recognize that God has used these hidden blessings to refine us, to make us more compassionate and a people who look more like Christ. Each person is a reflection of God's image, as Michelle said so perfectly in the video. And when we celebrate the gifts of special needs in our community, it does something to us. And so in honoring them today, we actually honor God. And in honoring them, we get to grow in the process as well.